Today's movie is Alone in the Dark from Uwe Boll. Was this truly Uwe Boll's worst movie ever made? Well, let's watch it and find out.
Mary! Mary, why aren't you a waitress? Mary, you've been drinking again, haven't you?
Enjoy the show.
And also bring a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes till somebody passes out. And then bring one every 10 minutes, right? You got it.
Is there anything I can get you to drink while you're looking at the menus?
Yeah, I want a single shot of whiskey and a double shot of whiskey, and she'll have a water. You know what the hell? It's our anniversary. Why don't you bring her a Pepsi?
Tonight, we'll be reviewing Dudley Moore in his latest film, Arthur 3, Revenge of the Liver.
Arthur, I'm afraid you have acute cirrhosis.
And you have a cute little butt.
I learned the truth a long time ago. Being afraid of the dark is what keeps most of us alive.
I can't believe it. It's happening again.
What's going on, Carnby?
That's what I'm trying to figure out here.
Some gateways should never be opened.
Hello? Hello?
Some fears should never be seen.
I don't think we're supposed to be here.
And some terrors can never be stopped.
Every culture's got a story about the end of the world, doesn't it?
But not every story starts to become true.
Get more bodies down here now!
The dark.
Little bitty kitties and they got tiny little toes. Little toes full of sharp.
Cool.
Full of sharp and mad. Sharp and mad.
Me and Nick did almost get into it. Because he is talking about how Dune launches this week, and you know we can be part of that Wednesday
premiere
thing. Did you
fuck the bucket?
And I think he said Donnell went and saw it at a different place,
probably AMC or Marcus or whatever.
He had like an early thing, and he got the bucket that everyone talks about and stuff. I was like,
of
you mean the bucket that doesn't give popcorn? But
whatever.
Nick is like,
his life is surrounded by popcorn. He's fine.
Donnell says it's really good. It's a lot better than the first one. And stuff. I was like, yeah, but I mean, the first one was all set up. He's like, yeah, but it is just like, if you watch the trailer, like, then you got everything you needed to know about the movie. It's like, no, you got the prophecy. You got all the setup for the war, the religious war that's happening in the second part. That's why the second part's so engaging, is because you already know what you need to know going into it. He's like, I just found it boring. It's like, well, sir,
what are you, my sister?
I will tell you exactly what I told Philly, which is the entire religious and technical history about Dune, and watch your eyes glaze over just like hers.
And she's like, look at my boobs. And you're like, you know what?
Cool. I could do two things.
So, I will continue talking about Dune while walking.
You know what your
boobs
remind me of? Dune.
This is a nice blue.
Two dunes.
Dune. Like, that. Anyway, what were we talking about? Dune. Anyway.
Meow, meow.
Yes. All right.
Welcome to Video Booze.
Pew, 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 pew.
I'm your host, Chuck. This is my sister, Mary.
Yeah.
And we are doing our official first Uwe Boll movie.
Honestly, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Shit. Well, when we, our first season, we said we're not going to touch Uwe Boll. And then you're like, eh, maybe we'll hit two. I was like, all right, two of them, or, you know, see how it goes. Because he's notorious.
Yeah, he is, but, like, I don't like the idea. Okay, like, so, like, for me, I have to have, like, a really specific reason why I don't want to watch somebody's movies. So, like, there are certain directors where it's like, I can't think of his name, but he did Clown House. He did Jeepers Creepers, Powder.
Oh, that
where
guy.
He, like, yeah. Like, I honestly don't want to watch those movies. It's nothing about anything people, like, any of the people that were involved on it. It's just, I don't know. There are different levels to why I don't want to, right? And I feel like that's my right, and it's not me saying it's shit. It's just me saying I am walking away. It's not a dissimilar feeling here with Uwe Boll. So, but the thing is like, at least with Uwe Boll, it was like, okay, like, if the only reason is that when I watch his movies, it makes me feel like, what the fuck? I'm like, well, you watch Mystery Science Theater 3000. What's this? And you just fucking watch it. Well, it's fine. Chill the fuck out, bitch.
So I got a whole in-depth thing on Uwe Boll, since, you know, it's our first one. He's quite notorious, and I mean, it's basically shooting a dead horse making fun of his movies anyway.
I know, kind of, right? Like an easy target.
Everybody knows it. Everybody knows, like, for the first decade of the 2000s, he was the only one getting video game properties, and they sucked.
God, what a horrible time in your life. And you guys have no idea what you didn't have to deal with.
Like, 90% his fault why video game movies took a lot longer to catch up. The other 10% is the video game movies that came just before him, which were also really bad, a la Mario Bros.
Right. Shit.
So, but yeah, I specifically picked Alone in the Dark because there's going to be a remake coming out here in, when we release this, it'll be the early March, and the game releases like March 20th. It's going to feature what's his name, from Stranger Things, the cop.
Oh God, what's his name?
David Harbour.
Oh, yep.
So David Harbour will be playing as Edward Carnby, the lead character, and it's going to be a remake of the original, so it's set in the 1920s, he's a private investigator, and inspecting a haunted house, so like I like to do with video games is go into more of the history of the game first, and then we'll do the movie. And I wish to warn our listeners that I have a little bit on the game, and I have a lot of bit on Uwe Boll, so it'll be a little bit before we get to the movie.
All right. That means pee breaks and cat breaks.
Because they constantly sit at my door and meow, even though I literally just fed them before we started recording.
Hungry now.
Alone in the Dark, the game. The first one came out in 1992. It's the first video game to have the survival horror moniker attached to it. It's made by Infogames. You control Edward Carnby as he investigates a haunted house full of undead creatures. The first game is also the first one to use a polygonal characters on a pre-rendered background.
Polygonal? Like, so they're like poly shapes? Like
square people on top of
polygonal. Do we want to get Robot in on this?
Robot? He'll go into the science of the minerals that created the game.
No, I think it's polygonal. polygonal?
Maybe I'm trying to mix it with
guys. Is it polygonal or polygonal?
Maybe I'm trying to say it as if it's like polygamy.
Is it yeah.
Polygamy.
But like, I mean, you've got other suffixes. I don't know.
Anyway,
guys, is it polygonal or polygonal?
Send us a message at videoboos@gmail.com.
I was like, polygonal? What the fuck are you talking about, polygonal? So, like, what, they're, like, Mormons? Sorry, go on.
So, polygonal characters on pre-rendered backgrounds using tank controls and stuff. Later on, like, a year later, Capcom would use this system to make their Resident Evil games. And everybody remembers the Resident Evil games.
Because they're... Yeah. Iconic.
Which is interesting because during the time of Resident Evil's rise, the originator of these mechanics had like 4 sequels in the same time and basically died.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
So Carnby is the main character in every game.
Mm-hmm.
There are 6 games, including this most recent one. This will be the 6th game released.
Mm-hmm.
In the first 3, it's kind of a straightforward story. The first one, he's inspecting a haunted house. And then the second one is he has to go inspect a haunted house in California. And then the third one's like a haunted house in Louisiana.
So
it's like 3 different investigations.
It's just haunted houses.
Yeah,
okay.
It's just spooky location. I'm an investigator. You know.
We're going to dig deep on this one, guys. It's going to be a haunted house, but it's going to be in Portland.
So, after all that, around...
Honestly, that would just be Dagon territory, wouldn't it?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, like haunted house in Portland.
So, it's usually like haunted house, and then it goes into like the occult stuff, and, you know, somebody summoned these ghosts, and there's a demon you have to kill kind of thing.
Yeah.
But... pretty simple stories. It's not like one big narrative with big grand like light versus dark kind of elements, because that comes in Alone in the Dark: The New Nightmare, which came out in the early 2000s. It's set in 2001, and New Nightmare is basically what the entire script for the movie we watched is based on. So that's where all the bullshit came from.
Right. Of course.
But in this one, Edward Carnby is raised as a shadow hunter in an orphanage. And similar to the movie, there's an orphanage, there's like 20 kids. In the game, though, all of the kids are named Edward Carnby. Because it's like they
like,
have
like
their prophecy.
Robert Paulson? Like, yeah. What the fuck?
Because they're named Edward Carnby as the literalized name came from ancient phonetics, I guess, where his name, the conquerors, the shadow hunters, they're called Elwar Quarnby, meaning the one who battles evil and hunts shadows. And so it's just like, how can we get meta with this main character's name of Edward Carnby? Oh, I'll just make some Spanish names up.
And his girlfriend is Lucy Fur.
Right?
Guys, we are nailing it.
So, yeah, basically all of the kids that grow up to hunt these shadows, they're called Edward Carnby because that's their prophesized name, titles. And then
that's
after this,
fucking cheating the system, dog.
Right. And then in 2008, another kind of reimagining came out, which is probably the more infamous of it. But it basically retcons New Nightmare, and is supposed to follow the first 3 games. But the thing it adds is like Edward Carnby from the 3rd game basically gets immortal life, so he's lived for 100 years, and now the shadows are coming back and he has to stop, so he's like literally the guy from the first game just living forever. and he's like he has, the reason he's lived forever is because he's possessed by darkness. And this game, it came out on 360 first. It was completely broken. And then they released a PS3 version, which is supposed to be like the director's cut definitive version. And it was still completely broken. So, yeah, it was one of those games at the time that is, like, definitely when Let's Players and stuff were first getting big before streaming became a main thing.
Mm-hmm.
This was definitely one of those games that got all those views because of how broken it was and how people reacted to the brokenness. But if you did manage to work with the broken shit long enough, you could get the funniest fucking endings ever.
Right.
In which Edward Carnby is supposed to be the Lightbringer, and they have to open the doorway to hell so he could kill Lucifer. And they open this big doorway, and then his girlfriend gets possessed by the darkness, and it's like, you have to kill me if you want to kill Lucifer. So then you're given a choice. Two choices. One, you can walk away because you don't want to kill her. She's your girlfriend. And the game literally ends with Edward Carnby walking away going, I'm the Lightbringer. And he just walks away, and the possessed girlfriend's like, ha ha ha, I win again, and shit. And then it just rolls credits. The second version is, you shoot her in the face, and then the shadow that's possessing Edward Carnby takes over. It's like, I am Lucifer, and now I have the body of the Lightbringer! And then it rolls credits. And it's like, both of these are really bad. Like, they're just bad.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you get a chance, look it up. I might find the audio clip of it, because the presentation of these people saying these lines is hilarious. So yeah, they're set to release a remake. And in this one, you could actually choose between Edward Carnby or Emily Hartwood. Emily Hartwood is the character that hires Carnby to investigate her haunted mansion that is left to her by her grandfather or uncle.
Is that like a euphemism for like hiring a young guy as an old lady to fuck him? Like I'm an old lady and you're a young prostitute man. Could you come like investigate my haunted mansion?
No, I'm pretty sure it's just a mansion with ghosts, Scooby-Doo style.
With my vagina. But I mean, like in an old lady way. Wait, yeah.
Those teenagers be fucking.
Yeah,
I
know.
When this van's a rocking, that means we got a redneck with a monster mask on it tied up in the
God,
back.
What was the if this van is a rock and that means something's very wrong, please come ask us what. God, what was that from?
I don't remember.
I have a pretty good feeling it was probably Community.
Probably.
Yeah, if it came from me like that, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we'll have to look it up and like we'll like just like edit it in later. Hmm. But go on.
So, as with all these games that kind of have dead IPs that they wish to kind of bring some hype back to, maybe test the waters for another remake, they decide a movie is the way to go. But Mario was such a big failure, so we don't want to invest too much money into it.
Right.
So who's willing to put out a movie with $100,000? Uwe Boll.
Anytime.
It was actually $20 million. I was being a bitch. It was actually a $20 million budget. I was just being a bitch.
But like that was like okay. So like the thing about Uwe Boll, if I remember correctly, and I'm pretty sure you've got it somewhere in your notes, that like the main reason why he was able to make as many movies as he is able to make with the quality that he's able to make despite everything else, is simply because like there's like a loophole system in his country where yeah. like he can just make movies, and as long as you're making movies you get like an anyway it's yeah. anyway
I do have that in my notes.
Okay,
here
okay
somewhere.
Okay, I figured you did, but like so it's like when people are like why does he keep making movies, and it's like because he can.
Yeah.
He found the loophole, and like part of me is kind of like, he could basically
make movies for nothing.
Right? Like, and I mean, like, as much as I don't like him and as much as I don't like his movies, like, what he's doing, it's kind of like, rebel, but also you fucking suck.
Yeah.
Like, Uwe Boll, like, everything about him sucks, but that is pretty rad.
Well, I mean, okay, so.
I guess we'll get into it, but the States, but continue.
So, Alone in the Dark 2005, directed by Uwe Boll.
Mm.
He also directed the game movie Postal, and House of the Dead, and Far Cry, and Blood Rain, and In the Name of the King.
And Blubberella.
And Blubberella. But Blubberella wasn't a video game movie.
It wasn't.
It was neither him was being Rain an asshole. 2,
but he also directed that.
He basically did Blood Rain as, like, what if she was fat? That would be funny.
Like, and that was the whole thing. Like, apparently that was the story. It's like, he's like, well, I have this set. Might as well not let it go to waste. What if we did Blood Rain, but with a fat chick? And it's just like, holy fuck, guy. Wow. Wow. But.
Yeah.
It was a different time.
So, he holds a PhD in literature from the University of Cologne. He had previously retired in 2016 from being a filmmaker to be a restaurateur. So he had like 3 or 4 restaurants. And all of them got hit hard in 2020. Mm. But the point is like, as a restaurateur, he got really great ratings. Like, everyone loves his food, so it's like,
what the fuck?
Okay.
What the fuck?
He hasn't needed to threaten to box any of the critics of his restaurant.
Wow.
But actually, very recently in 2022, he decided he wanted to do movies again.
Of course he did.
So he's back at it. He has always wanted to be a filmmaker, even when he was a kid. It's the kind of a very similar story to like Spielberg and Lucas, where as kids their dads gave them a video camera and they like reenacted their favorite movies with it and stuff. Of course, Alone in the Dark is regarded as one of the worst films ever made, including by him.
And I don't know, man. Including by him, there are way worse. Yeah. Like, of his. Like,
I'm watching that and I'm like, no. House of the Dead is way worse than this.
Right? Like, this one I can kind of watch at points. It, like, not all the time, but there are points where I'm like, what?
It has at least a narrative close to the games.
So I was so proud of myself today. Like, so I was explaining to some of my friends. I was all like, hey guys, so like, yada yada yada, I'm sorry I can't hang tonight, like I gotta go record this thing with my brother, we're talking about, like, you know, Alone in the Dark by Uwe Boll. And they're like, oh. And I was like, yeah, but if you consider it of his oeuvre, it's not too shabby. And they all looked at me and I was like, eh. And some of them, they're like, girl, stop it, we all know you went to community college. Okay, you read one book in your entire life. well.
And it was the Rhyming Bectionary.
I watched Citizen Kane. No, it was Citizen Kane.
Sorry, so, guys. All of his films are financed through Boll KG and Event Films, which are his German production companies. So I mean, he technically helped build them, co-owns them, kind of thing.
Right.
He actually has 2 documentaries about him. One is Raging Boll from 2010, and then another one, which if you don't know Uwe Boll personally and how much of an asshole he is, like, all of this still sounds like really good, like this is a stand-up guy. But I would love to have a documentary named this. In 2018 they made a documentary called Fuck You All.
No.
The Uwe Boll story. It's like, I want that.
But then you watch the documentary and you're like, oh man, fuck him.
Well, yeah. I mean, both of these are definitely like, look at this piece of shit. He doesn't give a fuck about anyone or anything.
And he really doesn't, you know?
And yeah, so every one of his films release at a major loss in the theaters, and all of that is recovered through a German tax loophole that has since been closed. So, like, it doesn't matter. It got closed in, like, 2014-ish. Mm. So, I mean, nowadays he actually has to make money on things. But the other side of it was all of his profits came from video sales. Because once it hit the videos, is just like, guys, we gotta watch this because it's hilariously bad. Or you catch those people that are like, I didn't know they made a movie on Far Cry. I love that game.
And, right.
Yeah. So it's like, they always like, recover their production costs through the German tax system, and then they made profits off video sales. And then he built a castle. And he lives in that castle. up to like 2006, Boll was working with a distribution company called Romar.
Mm-hmm.
And every time like one of his movies fell, he would just blame Romar. It was their fault. They didn't distribute it right. They didn't promote it right. They didn't do this right. It's like, dude, you made a shitty movie. But, so, Blair Erickson, he was a writer for one of the initial treatments for the Alone in the Dark script. His was a lot closer to the story of A New Nightmare.
Right.
But he right, gave...
Like, I know.
He gave Boll the script, and Boll stole other ideas from other movies, like, not even just his movies, just, like, other movies. He's like, I want to do this, I want to do that. And then he wanted to add elements to the story that were just not true to the source. Boll, the only thing they could get out of Uwe Boll was that he chose not to use Erickson's script because it was shit and there were not enough car chases.
Right.
And then you watch the final movie and it's like, okay, but all you had was like 1 5-minute car chase. None of the rest of the movie were people even in cars.
Right.
So what the fuck are you talking about? Uwe Boll also wanted to do a Metal Gear Solid movie.
Mm-hmm.
To which series creator Hideo Kojima responded, "It's impossible we would ever do a movie, especially with him." And then, as we've previously said during our Warcraft movie, Boll wanted to buy the movie rights from Blizzard to do World of Warcraft, the movie. And they said, we will not sell the movie rights, not to you, especially not to you. So,
cool.
If you want to know more on that story, go listen to our Warcraft movie review.
Oh my god.
With David Bowie's son.
Honestly, the more I think about that movie, the more I'm like, I kind of would watch it again and just let it be what... Like, it's really not a bad movie, even with the David Bowie attachment to it. Like, it's fine. It's a fine movie. And I love Ben Foster. God.
They pack in enough that you get the general gist. And I get that we are currently in an age of... it has to be perfect, or why bother? But when you also come from, you know, growing up with Uwe Boll, it's like, these people at least understand the game that they're making the movie on.
Well, the same thing with, like, comic book movies for a really long time. Like, yeah. It's like, there's no way anybody could adapt them. And then, like, I think X-Men, if I remember correctly, yeah, was a first. Well, okay, Blade, in my opinion, Blade Mystery broke. Men, but Mystery Men technically isn't a comic book movie.
But Blade is the one that actually broke the mold.
Fair. Right, like, I'll give, I'll give Blade a pass. Like, bitch, what the fuck do you know? Like, no, like, fair. But yeah, in my opinion, Mystery Men is, like, the first, like, quote, end quote, comic book movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I think X-Men was kind of, like, the next, like, the thing that made it, like, wow, we can make this into an entire genre.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Blade was the first comic book movie that successfully, like, made an insane profit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, the next one would be X-Men. And X-Men was a little bit more special just because of how many actors you have to keep throughout the movies. With Blade, it's like, if we have Wesley Snipes, we have a Blade movie.
Yeah.
Until he gets Blade too high to read the script.
What?
And then we try to replace him with Ryan Reynolds, and it doesn't work. So why don't you X-Men people use him for Deadpool?
You heard the Patton Oswalt story about, like, okay, yeah. So, like, for whatever it's worth, like, long story short, real quick, look it up. Patton Oswalt has a story about when he was working on Blade 3, right? Basically, they kept doing intercutting scenes of, like, Ryan Reynolds saying, like, Ryan Reynolds shit. Like, just random fucking, like, off-the-cuff, like, zip-zap-zop kind of shit. And then they would cut it with, like, images of, like, Wesley Snipes as Blade going, like, face. And then, just like, so, like, grimacing. The idea is, honestly, I would love to watch an entire 2.5 hours of Ryan Reynolds just, like, saying random shit.
Trying to
even though
get,
Ryan Reynolds is now, in this current state, kind of getting close to being overplayed. I would love
Ryan Reynolds trying to get Wesley Snipes to break a smile as if he's, like, talking to one of the Buckingham Palace guards.
Dude, seriously. Honestly, and at the end of the day, you know what I'd rather be doing? Watching Eurotrip.
Yeah, well. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, as far as comic book movies, they,
I fucking
you
love
know,
that fucking movie.
They broke out pretty big, and then now we wish some studios would stop. Like, Sony. Sony really needs to stop. Please. Please, Sony, it hurts. Please don't do this anymore. It hurts.
Sony. Go. Cradles your chin in but its then giant hands and says, no.
And then it's like, you know, but then their animation division is like, yes, please more of these. But then it's like, yeah, we whip our writers and set their desks on fire. And it's like, please like stop hurting the animators. But also keep having them animate things because they're really good.
No, we crush them. We crush them.
How will we break their spirit? No, their spirit is what makes it good. Broken spirit?
Broken smash. Capitalism says crush. Nom nom nom. Crunch, crunch, crunch.
We didn't make $2 trillion on this movie, so everybody loses their Christmas party.
Hey, fuck you guys, eh? Right? Anyway, so I got a raise. I own this company.
So we got two writers, Michael Roche and Peter Shearer. Both of them wrote the exact same movie scripts for Uwe Boll.
Mm-hmm.
Far Cry, House of the Dead 2, Alone in the Dark 2, and Alone in the Dark 1. The third writer is Ellen Mustai, and they wrote for MVP2,
mm-hmm.
Most Valuable Primate, the movies, because Air Bud became popular where Golden Retriever was playing basketball, so MVP was a hockey monkey.
I remember that.
And number two was him doing skateboarding tricks.
Shit. I hate that. I hate that I remember that. That sucks. Fuck you. By the way, hashtag. Fuck. Anyway.
So, this was made on a budget of $20 million, and its entire time in theaters, it grossed $12
million. Right.
And was lauded as the worst movie to have ever come out. Got multiple Razzie nominations.
I mean, deservedly. very deservedly. It's just my favorite quote from Tara Reid in this movie is, guys, over here. Because that's all she says.
She says a lot of things. She has a lot of scientific things that she talks about as she puts her hair up in a knot and puts glasses on. Because Uwe Boll thought that would make her look smart enough to be an archaeologist.
Poor Tara Reid. She really wanted something, and then she got Uwe Boll. But also, guys, over here, and I'm not saying that, like, to shit on her. Like, it's like, yeah. Wow, guys, really? Way to utilize the chick.
Put more emphasis on how shit Uwe Boll is, he initially regretted hiring Tara Reid because he wanted a hardcore sex scene between Christian Slater and the female lead, and she would not take off her shirt, and they would fight, but she had in her contract that if she did not want to, she did not have to declothe, and so
like a human person.
He basically threw a clipboard. It's like, I should have just hired a European actress.
Yeah, I guess so. Like,
but it's also like, you know, we'll get into it more, but basically the Christian Slater and Tara Reid characters are not supposed to be love interests in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're just colleagues. But Uwe Boll is like, movies don't work unless there's sex. And I think he's watching the wrong kind of movies.
Right.
Uwe Boll, please get off Pornhub when you're writing the script.
God, dude, that was way before Pornhub.
Yeah.
No, that was, like, back when you still just, Lime like, Wire. Had to walk into a fucking, like, show, or, like a, what's that?
Well, there's still, dial-up internet and stuff, so it was just kind of like, you know, he had LimeWire and he was downloading a bunch of movies that would corrupt his computer, and they'd be like, please stop using the internet for this, I have to make a business call, and he's like, business my ass, click, click, click.
Monkey. You know, honestly, okay, so, like, total non sequitur, but, like, so, you know the meme of, like, hey, this thing, blah, yada, 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 and then, like, you have, like, the monkey, it's, like, a puppet monkey, and it's, like, looking away, but also not looking away?
Yeah.
How come it's not the kitty cat from I'm Not a Cat meme with the lawyer? Do you remember? 'Cause
I remember, but I just...
Yeah, there's a scene where, like, he's, like, looking away, and it's, like, fucking amazing, and I love it because it looks like, you know, okay, so recently John Oliver brought it up again, and he was like, yeah, it's like a cat who witnessed a murder scene. It's like, you know what? It really is. It's just that cat going...
Maybe... You should create the meme template and post online. It's like, let's replace
that. Chucky, you gotta do that. You're
replace puppet monkey with this.
You're younger than me. You gotta do it.
I'm like 8 months younger.
No, you're not. That's fucking bullshit. How does that even math?
Well, because
shut the fuck up.
For half the year, I'm
September 87, April 89. Shut the fuck up.
What is it? It's like half the year I'm a year younger. The other half I'm 2 years younger or something?
I don't fucking know how math works. Have you noticed anything about me? I don't numbers.
You're the one with the kid. I don't know how kid math works.
I have one whole child. I have one whole child.
Dude, I used to have five until the authorities caught up.
Dude, at work... Okay, so here's the deal. At work, they have this thing where they're like, hey, we're teaching you this new system. And it's like, alrighty, here we go. But, like, one of their, like, examples of, like, customers that you know, just be mindful of these people, right? One of them is millennial, Mary, 3 kids. And it's like, what? And I was like, hey! Wait. And then, like, but the thing is, like, you know how I am. I was like, okay. I'm going to be a dead adult. I'm going to hold it in. That is really hard for me. That is one of the hardest things. I have the hardest time telling my id to say, shut up. Especially when I'm sitting. Mm-hmm. And I know my friends are around. And I just go, shut up. And I did. I shut it up. But the thing is, nobody else did.
I mean,
and everybody else was like, hey, Mary, Mary, you got three kids. And I was like, stop it. Just because I have one beautiful child and a husband and a fucking brother doesn't mean I have three children. But basically, yes, I do. I love
guess,
you.
Guess what I just thought of? Mary, why aren't you at waitress school? Are you drunk again?
You're not the man I married. This is the man I married.
Cheese with dinner. My mommy says that cheese gives you nightmares. Do you want to see my coloring book? I think there's a vampire living in my closet, but my mommy says that vampires and ghosts aren't real. She says that there's nothing to be afraid of in the dark.
Your mother's wrong, kid. Being afraid of the dark is what keeps most of us alive.
But people always tell me not to be afraid.
It's because they don't know the truth.
So, the movie starts with a whole wall of information.
Yeah, not like, even in a cool way.
It literally tells you everything this movie's about.
Doesn't it, like, read it as it goes
yeah,
by?
Yeah, there's a narrator. And because they forgot to put the story in the movie. And so everybody was confused when they saw it as a test audience. And so they're like, oh, well, oh, I know how to fix this for cheap.
Of course you do. Totally fixed.
Like, but yeah, it's talking about how there's this ancient war between light and dark, and it's been waging for 1,000 years, and there was an incident at this nearby gold mine in 1960s, and there's also this bureau called Bureau 713, and it's a government agency to study the whole dark realm. And then there's a Dr. Hodgins, and he's in charge of this scientific research stuff. And it's like literally everything you need to know about
right?
this
movie. It's like, wow, if only we could just be watching this instead of being told this while also reading it at the same time.
Right. So after that, we kind of get a more cold open on an orphanage. But it's like there's a little kid running through the woods, and he's being chased by a bunch of government-looking guys. And then it cuts to the orphanage, and there's a young Dr. Hodgins talking to the nun. And she's like, oh, I wish you didn't have to take the children. He's like, if I don't take them now, then they'll shut us down and take them anyway, kind of thing. So already there's a mystery involved with these children. That's the wind pressure bouncing the door.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought it was a cat going.
I know, but that's why the cat's knocking is so loud. It's because my door has that wiggle room.
Yeah.
So it bounces.
You're like, I need to get like now we've got some room. Bom bom.
I need
bom.
To get like a weather stripping or something just to kind of like brace the gap. But
Puppy's like, I'm going to get big enough that I could just burst through this bitch.
She already tried.
And then she'll be like, what? I said,
they realized it takes a lot of effort to dig through my door. So just sitting there meowing does the trick.
You know, they're working on every front. It's kind of like, you know, like they are the U.S. government and you're the, what is it? The Carishians. You know what I mean? Waco.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, David Koresh. What is the word? What were they called? We need to edit that in there.
I don't remember what they were called.
Okay, you're better than I am.
Uh-huh. Davidians.
Yes, the Branch Davidians.
They're an offshoot of Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Waco.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And,
David Koresh.
The government said, they're harboring weapons. We must drive a tank right through the middle of their compound and set everything on fire.
Yeah, and blame it on them. But also, it's like, you know, they were kids and they were like, yeah, it's weird that they let their kids get set on fire by the government, right?
If they didn't want their kids there, they would have sent them out peacefully. It's not our fault.
It is like, oh, okay. Question mark.
Not dissimilar then, like, to things still happening in Texas today.
You know what's really fucked up about it? It's like there are people who took that and they were like, hey, let's become more Nazi. And then there are people who are all like, wow, let's forget about it. And it's kind of like, hey, we should just like really look at it and not be like, just like, wowee, sure is neat that the government has the ability to just walk in and kill everybody. Please don't isolate this and make me look like a Nazi. I'm not a Nazi.
Oh, no, this is going to be the preview for the episode.
Oh, thank you. I love you. My point being is, golly gee, people shouldn't have to be murdered for shit. Like, we could just, like, not murder people. And, whatever. Ugh.
Okay. So, the Dr. Hudson gets mad when he hears... one of the kids ran off. And so there's 19 out of 20, you know. They can't find the kid. It turns out the kid found, like, a power station, and he's hiding in there, right? But after the agents leave with the kids, the nun calls the cops and gives them the story that the kids just disappeared. I don't understand. I fed them dinner, and then I went to go check up on them, and they're all gone.
Right.
By the way, she's still a nun like 20 years later there, and it's like, I don't know, you kind of lost 20 kids in a second.
And it's kind of weird that, like, the house is like this, like, old farmhouse from yada yada, like, time. instead of, like, a nunnery or some sort of, like, official Catholic facility.
Quaint and quirky and...
I don't know.
That's hometown American.
It's almost like so weird. It could almost be in a dream.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's or it's some like kind just of negligible movie enough.
Set? No. So, we cut from that to modern day, which has Christian Slater playing Edward Carnby, waking up on the plane, and if you don't know Christian Slater. But you would like to.
Who wouldn't?
Go watch Heathers, like because that was one of his better roles.
God.
That I hear. I still haven't watched Heathers.
Don't forget about Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah,
like, even that. Though he was supposed...
He is in Young Guns 2. He was also one of the merry men in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
The Kevin Costner one.
Mm.
He is also the... main hero in Broken Arrow. Do you remember that movie?
I do not. Okay.
That was one of my favorite
movies. Okay, tell me about Broken Arrow.
Is like
Should we put it on our list?
Maybe.
Okay.
It's a 90s action movie.
Okay.
Similar to The Rock that Michael Bay directed. But this one is John Travolta is the militant leader who gets his squad to rebel against the American government. And so they get this missile called the Broken Arrow. And they're going to sell it overseas or something for a huge price. And they load it up onto a train. And Christian Slater is the guy who kind of uncovers this. It was something like he was one of the jet fighters that had this missile aboard. And they had a malfunction which caused them to eject the missile.
Mm-hmm.
But Christian Slater, as the pilot... still landed in the same area, and he just kind of like followed the missile and found out that it was all set up by you know, and yeah, so I remember like the final scene is John Travolta basically setting the bomb to explode, and him and Slater having like a fist fight, and the girl the like love interest girl, she manages to find the like emergency brake for the train.
Of course she does.
Pulls it, and then of course kind of like throws the missile forward, so it like hits John Travolta in the chest and flies him out the train.
Fun. God, John Travolta. We should do like a month of like weird John Travolta movies, right. Like the atypical John Travolta movies.
I mean, The Rock has Nicolas Cage and James Bond guy. Mm-hmm. Why am I blanking on his name? Sean Connery.
Okay.
Directed by Michael Bay, you know. It's like this big action movie everyone caters to his stuff. And it's like, I don't know, this one is like the exact same story with B-movie actors. Like, not as big on the special effects and stuff, but I kind of like it more just because it's really more of a, I wouldn't say tongue-in-cheek action movie, but it's like it knew what it wanted to be. Whereas The Rock was like, no, we gotta make this a blockbuster style.
Of course. Yeah. Right.
So,
overdo
I like
it, if you will.
Broken Arrow more.
Fair enough. I like Heather's. I also like Interview with the Vampire. I like him when he's like at his like gothiness and more punkiness. Yeah.
And say what you want, but the Robin Hood with Kevin Costner was also really good.
Wasn't he also the voice of what's his face in Ferngully?
Yes.
Yeah, and it also had Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that is one of the most 90s movies of all 90s movies that is ever 90s, right?
Yeah, basically.
Like, there is so much 90s going on other than... Okay. So here's an idea. Why don't we have a competition? What's more 90s? Biodome or Ferngully?
Because Ferngully, like, kind of encapsulates the whole, like, green movement that the 90s was pushing heavily.
And Biodome.
And, I mean, Biodome does have that, but Biodome also, like, sprinkles in the, what is that kind of music called?
Grunge,
yeah.
Yeah.
Has that, like, sprinkling of grunge kinda. in the like... I don't give a fuck of that generation, you know?
The apathy.
Yeah, the apathy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, Biodome has that little bit extra. Ferngully has...
I also argue that Ferngully has the apathy. The guys, like, fucking, like, sawing the trees, going like, oh, yeah, sure is sad that we miss blah, blah, blah.
Ferngully kind of... puts the message front and center, whereas Biodome is like the apathy is more front and center.
Oh yeah, Biodome is way more subtle. Biodome is like super like the Citizen Kane of Pauly Shore movie. Honestly though, Biodome is the Citizen Kane of Pauly Shore movies, and I know this because I am a Pauly Shore historian.
What I wrote in my notes that the Slater is on a plane being irritated by a kid, and it's literally like, you know, a long plane ride, people take naps, right? As soon as he wakes up, this kid starts talking to him. It's like, hey, why do you only eat these kinds of chips instead of those kinds of chips in your chip bag? It's like, fucking no, kid. I just fucking woke up.
Kid.
I hate this kid, you know.
And it's like, why are you like 15 and still in a diaper? Like, what is up with this child?
And yeah, this kid just keeps talking. He's like, my parents are. He says something like, aren't you afraid of talking to me? I'm a stranger. And the kid's like, my parents told me not to be afraid. I'm not afraid of strangers or monsters or anything in the dark. And he's like, you should be afraid of things in the dark.
and then like, he bites the kid. See, now that's the movie I want to watch.
The kid just gets like this dark look and it cuts away,
oh,
and it's like,
no,
honestly,
mommy.
They really, I mean, it's Uwe Boll, so like his kind of comedy is like not great. But in
no
another person's hands, this is like the great opening for a comedy of just like traumatizing a kid before you get off a plane.
Like, in better hands, these ideas can be so much more. But they're not.
So, just, like, randomly, so we just got introduced to Christian Slater, and then it cuts away to a ship in the middle of the ocean, and we... It's just like an aerial view of the ship, but you get this radio call of, yes, he just landed in the city and he has the artifact on him. Well, I need you to kill him and get the artifact for me. Yes, sir. And then it cuts back to Christian Slater. It's like, do we really need that? But the audience would be lost without it. Apparently they were still lost by the opening text crawl, so I don't think we need that.
You're not really good at a plot.
But so we
in movie.
We cut back to Slater, and he's doing his own internal narration about fearing what's in the dark, and why he does what he does, and he's lost all of his memories when he was a kid, and he's talking about all this stuff while he's getting a cab outside the airport, and it's establishing that there's somebody else in a cab that's following them. And then the driver of the cab, he's he does a lot of Uwe Boll movies. I think he's the lead in Postal. Brendan Fletcher. I forgot to write it down, but yeah. He actually played Robert in the Last of Us TV series in the first episode. If you'd like to hear more, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/videoboos to listen to our entire Last of Us episodic rundown.
Give us money, please. We're hungry. Literally starving.
But yeah, he's been in so many movies.
Because he knows how, like, to fucking make it work. Yeah, like, we are trying to.
He's like the quintessential extra for everything.
Professional.
So many. You scroll down his IMDb and it's like 4 or 5 movies a year he's in. And some TV shows.
Good for him.
Yeah.
No, honestly, that's fucking dope.
So, but in this, like, his only role is the cabbie. which is like, you know, he does the, like, oh, what are you doing in town? And Slater's like, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. He's like, try me. I've heard it all. And it's like, I actually used to work for the secret government agency that is so secret they might kill you if I utter a word about it. And I'm searching for these things that are from the people from darkness. And he's like, okay, that's pretty weird.
Cool.
And then the guy that's following him starts, like, ramming them.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my god, my boss is gonna fucking kill me! Which is actually a normal reaction to someone in that position. I know, right. That's what I'd be worried about. It's like, I don't care who this guy is if he's trying to kill me, but if I survive this, my boss is gonna kill me. Because the damage to the car. But... at one point they're like they're driving and they cut down some side streets and there's like a street market thing going on, and Uwe Boll uses this moment to do the first slowdown of the movie to make it more epic as they're like hitting fruit carts and shit, and it's just like, okay,
not fun.
But also you could tell that, like, this wasn't just a random alleyway that people that he put carts in.
Wait a second, is this Aladdin?
My cabbages.
Exactly, my cabbages. Watch out, Aang. Even though, wait, God, what? 10 years before Avatar?
Yeah, about that.
Give or take, yeah. Anyway.
And so, my favorite part of this is they get out of that alleyway, crash the car. And the driver, he's kind of like barely conscious, and Slater's like, just stay here, I'll get help. He gets out of the car, and as soon as he gets out, the guy that's following them smashes into the cab driver's side. It's like, You just told that guy to stay in the car, and then he gets smashed. You're the worst hero ever.
Yeah. We're not great at anything.
So, but this leads into that guy starts, like, a fist fight with Slayer, which he easily overpowers. And at one point, he has Slayer on the ground, and he pulls this artifact out of Slater's jacket. And Slayer does, like, this kick to knock it out of his hand. But you realize he's, like, back on the he's prone on the ground. So he kicks upward, knocks the artifact out of the guy's hands, and uses that momentum to backflip back onto his feet so he's standing, so he could grab the artifact in the air. It's like, what in the John Woo hell is this?
John Woo shit.
Uva Ball just saw Mission Impossible 2 and was like, yes.
Oh, John Woo bullshit. Ooh, bullshit.
It's so fucking stupid.
It sucks. Oh my god. And it's just like, I don't know, like, there's something about it that just reads like you read the bare basics of like how an effect shot like that would work, right?
Yeah.
And that's totally cool. Like, a lot of really cool movies kind of did that same thing. Like, what is it? El Mariachi, right? Yeah. But
there's a difference between being influenced by the scenes and copying the scenes exactly. Especially when the scene you're copying doesn't fit the tone of your movie.
I mean, because it was Matrix at that time, if we think about it, right? Well, like, that would have been
what... Matrix and John Woo were both big in the early 2000s.
Yeah, no. Like,
so,
yeah.
John Woo, like...
Because there's a lot of weird Matrix-y shit, too.
I would say, like, Matrix would be the visual effects of, like, slow motion and, like,
shooting
dodging
Johnny
and shit. Knows. And John Woo would be, like, the practical effects of slow motion dodging and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, but isn't there a couple of... Anyway.
There's crossovers and stuff, but that's because, you know, Matrix was influenced by John Woo, and John Woo was influenced by kung fu movies he grew up with and stuff.
Oh my gosh, it's like, yeah, fair enough.
But again, we're talking about the difference between influenced by and direct copy.
I prefer the term homage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure Uwe Boll does too.
Yeah, he would like to think he does. I don't think he knows how to spell homage. I don't think he knows how to spell homage.
So this leads Slater to sprint away, and there's like a nearby fish market thing going on. I mean, there's, like, barrels of fish everywhere. There's blocks of ice and stuff. But all of this is to say that it's just to set up Uwe Boll doing a Matrix-style slow-motion effect where Slater turns around with his handgun and shoots. And it, like, does this, like, zoom into the barrel with the bullet. And the bullet fires out. And it breaks through the block of ice. And he fires twice in that slow motion. And there's two bullets that break the block of ice. And it hits the guy, and only one bullet hits the guy. So I'm pretty sure Slater just hit some random person behind the guy.
God. You know, because bullets, like, they only hit bad guys.
Or they only set up one squib, and then later when doing the, like, graphics, Uwe Boll's like, I want two shots.
more, shoot.
It's really cool if it does two.
I want more shots because it means it is more action instead of just horror. I don't want people to think it's just horror.
But all of this is to show that this guy isn't slowed down by bullet wounds or anything. Almost like he has a supernatural presence controlling his body. Eventually, Slater, like, knocks him off of... like a catwalk thing, and he gets impaled on a spike perfectly through his spine, and that ends up killing him. And it's like, well, that's curious. And then he walks away.
Of course. Well, off to doing other things now. La la la. You know how it is. There's the day you and then there's the night you.
It's like, all right, well, bad guy's dead. Cabbie's dead. A couple people I shot randomly are dead. Wonder what Tara Reid's doing. We'll just cut to that.
I wonder what her boobs are feeling like right now. I should go find out.
It cuts to Tara Reid, who is in charge of this museum. And she works under Dr. Hodgson. And in this scene, a package is delivered for Dr. Hodgson with specific instructions that nobody but Dr. Hodgson is supposed to open it. And the delivery guy is like, there's these special instructions for the box. And she's like, I work for Dr. Hodgson. I know how he is. I'm going to open it regardless because I need to check the materials.
Right.
Right? And the security guard is like, hey, but it takes your mind off your boyfriend, right? And she gets a bad look and she just walks off. And the delivery driver's like, what the fuck was that about? Security guard's like, oh, her boyfriend's been missing for 3 months.
Mm.
It's like, okay.
Cool story. Jesus. Okay. I don't know. But also, like, dude, why would you say that? Why would that be the first thing you say to a person you meet? Like,
and why are these the two guys with this dialogue?
Because it's an Uwe Boll movie. Yeah.
Again, no. If this was, like, meant to be more comedy, I could see this as a thing. But just random, like, okay.
Honestly,
I guess
the
security
like,
guard knows all about her life.
I gotta say, like
maybe if her boyfriend's missing for 6 months, she'll let me go out with her.
Listening to you describe it kind of just makes me be like, you know what would be fun? Is if, like, we put this movie alongside with Eurotrip. Because, like, there's so much about it where it's like, wowee!
At least for the first, like, 30 minutes.
I mean, then it gets really bad. And then it's like, I don't know what to do with any of this shit. Like, this is because some...
typical Uwe Boll fashion, this is just all the preamble, and then once... you know, the action
starts. And then a clusterfuck, and then it's over.
Nothing really happens. It's just a big old mess of shooty guns. So that's just a scene that happens. And then it cuts to the boat that's in the middle of the ocean, and they're like pulling something out of the water. And that's where Dr. Hodgson is. He's collecting a thing called the Abyss, or Erebus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's apparently this giant gold coffin looking thing. And that's it. That's the end of that scene. It's just like, we cut.
You know.
It's like those fucking old cartoons, like the Hanna-Barbera, George of the Jungle. It's like, we cut to a boat in the middle of the ocean. Dr. Hudson brings something out of the water. This is the discovery of the century. And back to George. It's like, okay.
Meanwhile, in the middle of nowhere. Anyway. At any point, courage is involved.
So, we cut back to Slater, who's going to his home, apparently. It's like an empty department store that he has a bed in. It's an entire warehouse. It's just, he's living there. At first I thought it was just like a house he broke into and he's like sifting around and stuff, but no.
Right.
That's his home.
Just where I live. It's kind of weird. But honestly, like, if you're going to have one of those like folding dividers, like just room dividers, but like as your headboard, and then you're supposed to have, like, raucous sex, that thing's gonna fucking go wham right on the floor and die. Like, well, not do that. Like, at least maybe not so close, and also, like, find a headboard, actually?
But you know what? That's not a problem in this movie, because Tara Reid didn't want to do a sex scene.
But I remember... I remember a sex scene in the movie.
They probably cobbled one together for a director's cut or something, but there's not one in this.
God.
Look, I really gotta start taking notes the first time we watch these, because this is like the third time I've had to rewatch a really bad movie just to take the notes on it.
Yeah.
And I don't like doing that.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, There's a scene later in the movie where Christian Slater is like shirtless in his bed and Tara Reid goes to his place, and then she just gets on his computer, starts looking at his notes. There's no sex involved, and they're supposed to be the love couple of this movie. At least that's what Uwe Boll's trying to push, but the script kind of follows more of the game where they don't have sex. So
okay, all right. next movie, it will be Mutual Notes.
This scene is just Slater coming home, and he pulls the artifacts out of his pockets, and he starts looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts back to the boat with Dr. Hudson, and they like reach the docks.
Mm-hmm.
And the boat crew's like, "Oh, this is a coffin made entirely out of gold. Maybe what's inside of it is a bunch of riches." And Dr. Hudson's like, "Yeah, but you're not allowed to look inside of it. That's my job. I'm paying you just to pull this out of the ocean." So the boat guy's like, "Or light bulb," and he punches Dr. Hudson, and they lock him in a cabin so that they can open the golden coffin. which turns out to be a bad idea because that unleashes like darkness monsters or something.
Oh no, the monsters!
It's not really clear because later on you get told that the darkness monsters are already out and about, and they've been out and about for like 2 or 3 years.
Because this movie is super uber duper good at making sense.
But this is like Dr. Hudson's locked in the cabin, and so all we hear is like the people outside screaming and dying and stuff. And
of course
and then it starts cutting around to like these people that you don't know. It's just like random people's lives, and they are like doing house chores or just like sleep in bed with their wives and stuff, and they get up and they just start walking out into the middle of the street as if they're possessed. The sleeper agents have awoken.
Donna, like, you know what, it kind of weirdly in many ways reminded me of the scene in You would know the title better, but the really really the sequel to Terminator.
Terminator 2.
but like where the mom's like Donna.
Oh yeah, where she was the T-1000.
Yeah, yeah, but it's like, but what if that? But times like at least 8 more.
Yeah. And they don't really kill the people they're around. They just kind of walk out.
Yeah, of course not. But it's got the vibe where it's like, we're just ordinary fucking people, and now we're not.
And then it cuts back to Dr. Hudson, and the ruckus has died down, so he opens the door, and all of the crew members are laying on the ground with fake blood poured on them, with no open wounds. And Hudson just goes over to the golden coffin that is now sitting open. And apparently there's, like, a secret compartment in the bottom. And he opens that, and there's, like, a little device in there. And he just pulls it out, pockets it, and runs off. And it cuts to Brad Dourif.
I mean, God bless him.
Previously God starred bless in that man. Blade,
honestly,
mind you.
That man, I have to say, the way that he has endured time is fascinating.
It always fascinating. Feels like he should be in better movies, but he keeps picking the wrong movie to star in because it's not like giving him that boost up other actors got.
I also feel like maybe he's also still kind of just
not.
Anyway, yeah.
As Steven Dorff, not Brad Dorff. I don't know why I said Brad.
Oh
but...
no, we're fucking it up.
So Steven Dorff plays Commander Burke, who is the leader of Burrow 713's military group thing. But yeah, he is in Blade. He's in the first 3 episodes of Righteous Gemstones Season 3. He's in Fear.com. Mm. He's also one of the supporting characters in Space Truckers. And
God damn that movie.
This is the second what? Time this season we brought up Space Truckers. So maybe
this season? But I feel like it's the millionth time we brought it up, period.
So maybe we should talk about Space Truckers.
We should watch Space Truckers.
I watched it recently and it still kind of holds up.
Oh, God, no. I feel like it's like one of those camp movies that only a very specific demographic will be able to enjoy.
Right.
And I want to talk about it. Yeah, dog. Totally. Should we get, like, Sean on it? Or maybe. Do you think, think we should get Taylor on it and Jay?
Either one.
Guys, okay, so which one of you fuckers, I love you babies, which one of you guys want to talk about Space Truckers? Because I swear to God, you're going to love it.
It'll be a grand old time.
And also, you're going to be like, what?
The fuck is this shitty movie and why are you forced me to watch it?
Why do I have to be here? Why am I the one
Look, here. To entice you more, the beginning of the movie, the main character is transporting square pigs from Mars.
Look, all I gotta say it makes is that it's not my fault. I'm dating your fucking sister's best friend. I need to know why I'm here. Because none of this makes sense to me. This is you, Jay. This is what you sound like. I love you, Jables.
But, so Stephen Dorff, he's running around their bureau's control room, and right. apparently their sensors are going haywire. And he's like, what does it mean? How high are they going? And they're like, well, previously we've never seen before a 5, and now they're at 10. And maxing out.
Wee.
So, yeah, it's just like...
There's too much.
The thing that we are sensing is all over. And then it cuts to the next morning where Christian Slater is waking up because apparently it blacked out during this whole event, whereas all of the other people like became possessed. He just kind of blacked out.
Well, isn't the whole thing like he was special because he separated himself, right?
Well, I mean, we'll get into it, but this isn't even the part where he regains his memories.
Oh, okay.
There's a part later on where it's like, oh, my memories are back. I remember everything. So, he wakes up and he's getting, like, phone calls and stuff because he was still friends with one of the people that he was at the orphanage with.
Hmm.
And they're one of the people who were the sleeper agents. So his wife is, like, calling Slater. It's like, he just walked out of here randomly. And so Slater calls a doctor that he used to work with at the bureau. He's like, I need you to look up everything on this guy. Hmm. It's a special favor since I no longer work there. And this is classified information. So definitely do this illegal thing for me. And then he drives out to the old orphanage he grew up with, where the nun still works and has like 20 more children living there.
Of course. Because there's no reason why people should not keep giving her kids. But, good lord. I mean...
But yeah, it just... This is a nothing scene just to establish that the nun is still there and the orphanage is still there, really. Like, he just asked her basic information. Like, what really happened back then? She's like, I don't know, you guys just disappeared one night.
You know, when I think about it, it kind of reminds me of, like, the scenes they have in the first Silent Hill movie.
Yeah.
Of, like, the husband-father character, in
the real world, like,
right, and it's, like, almost like, well, because nobody would have understood it if it wasn't for Dorff being there.
Right.
And it's, like, okay, but... Okay.
We paid for this set where you'll use the set. What do you care? You're getting a tax write-off. Shut the fuck up. So.
Honestly, hashtag, like, Silent Hill sans husband cut. Anyway, go on.
So, yeah, he kind of, he tells the nun, it's like, I used to work for Bureau 713 for many years. And or no, this is a narration thing that he does.
Right.
And he's like, I used to work for the Bureau. But then every time I uncovered evidence about my history, they would just pick it up and classify it. And I was getting tired of all the red tape. And I knew if I had to find the answers, I had to go out alone.
Totally not at all suspicious. No red flags for me. Doop, doop.
And since this is a totally logical thing to do, he goes and sees Tara Reid. And it turns out that he's the boyfriend that's been missing for 3 months without a phone call. And he's like, I'm sorry, I was in the Amazon. And she's like, really? You couldn't have just called? You couldn't have just said, hey, I'm going to be in the Amazon.
Hey, were you in the Amazon researching spiders?
No, actually, he joined up with a rebellious group, and they found a gold mine, and he found all these artifacts at this gold mine.
Was it a spider gold mine? Was it? Did you run into the spider people? And did you find a spider? Sorry, the spider people were like, I just feel like it's like, how convenient, Amazon on Amazon.
The spider people are like, okay, we can either stop these guys looking into this gold mine that'll summon an entire force of darkness, or we could save this pregnant chick who was looking at the spiders that gives us these superpowers. I kind of want to save the pregnant chick.
You know what? She's at least a whole lot not you. I like her better because you suck.
I opened my own hotel.
Sure you do. Whatever you say, Pablo. Fuck off.
So, yeah, Tara Reid does the, like, oh my god, you're back. And then she, like, punches him in the face. She's like, you disappeared on me. He's like, yeah, and I only came back so that you could look over these artifacts that I don't understand. She's like, didn't you even miss me? And he's like, well, I was with some rebels for like 6 weeks, and then we found this mine.
Let's just say I sucked some dick. Me, Christian Slater, like, you going gluck, called. Gluck, gluck. Yum, yum, yum. Love it in my tummy. Gluck, gluck, gluck.
He's just like, look, I'm trying to give you the plot of this movie. And she's like, but you're a shitty boyfriend. And he's like, yeah, but plot stuff. And she's like, shitty boyfriend.
I mean... Yeah.
And then Uwe Ball is probably like, yeah, just pop that shirt off. Just go ahead, pop that off.
Oh, yeah, you showed no nipples. They should be like, oh my, yes, it's just time to make fertile time. Time to make with the population. There we go.
Oh, actually, I was wrong. I have it in my notes. When he blacked out, he did regain memories of his childhood.
Oh.
Which is kind of what led him back to the orphanage. But it's like,
well, good for him.
Bunch of flashes of memories. And, you know, this is the part where it's like they show the little kid that they had representing him. Mm. And they slick his hair back so he looks like Christian Slater.
Because it's just natural that his hair just like... Because we wouldn't understand otherwise.
It's like, I used to be a real piece of shit.
Dude.
My hair slicked back. Eating sloppy steaks every night.
Dude. Yeah, I was a real piece of shit.
Baby hates me just because he knows I used to be a piece of shit.
So you don't know what a sloppy steak is? Well, a sloppy steak is like a fucking steak covered in water. And you know what people would be slop like? What? You can't order that off the menu, but you know what nobody can stop you from doing? Ordering a steak and put two glasses of water.
Slop it up yourself.
Oh. Yeah, it's a real piece of shit. Anyway.
So, yeah.
So he was a real piece of shit.
Sorry. I only wanted to come back to those memories for this one particular joke. And that was all. Congratulations, okay. You survived our joke. Bye!
Yeah, like, no, I feel like most people be like, wait a second, they ripped off...
So yeah, that's when, like, all the power at this museum starts fluctuating, and everybody's like, oh my god, what's going on?
Question marks. Well, one of
the darkness monsters is there and eats the security guard who knew way too much about Tara Reid's love life. And then Slater and Reed have to run and hide in a closet from the monster. And then the monster punches a hole through the door. And so Slater, like, shoots it with his .357 Magnum. And it scares it off. And then that's when Steven Dorff and the 713 Brigade come busting in and start shooting the monster. And you can see these bullets bouncing off the monster. And it's just really scaring it away rather than killing it. And mostly what I wrote down for this particular scene is Dorff hates Slater. Because that's really all it is. You wish you were still in 713. You're not supposed to be around here. Well, I was here visiting my girlfriend. Talking about these artifacts. Yeah, well, you're not part of our unit anymore, so you can AMS gray.
Now we're going to make out.
Right? It's like, guys, if you want to, like, quick fuck.
Wait a second. What if you guys had, like, a three-way? Right? I think you'd all have a pretty great time.
You know, Uwe Ball, you couldn't get Tara Reid naked, but I'm pretty sure you'd get these guys naked.
I mean, honestly, maybe you should hashtag cut your losses. I mean, like, you know, a come is a coming, you know what I mean?
But, yeah, all of this is Slater steals Dorff's ID badge so he could get into the facility later on. Yeah, that's really about it. So, we cut to Slater visiting the doctor, who he asked for information on his friend about. And right now, the doctor is performing an autopsy on the guy at the beginning of the movie who died from getting speared through the spine. And this is where they find, like, oh, this is, there's some kind of, like, parasite larva thing that attaches to the spine, and that's what's controlling people. And it's almost like he ripped off the story of X-Files when they did this exact same thing.
Right.
It's literally season one of X-Files,
you would
guys.
You know this better than I would. I was like, yeah, no, honestly, that seems right. Like, yeah. I would fucking know.
No, it's an episode where, they have to go to Antarctica, and there's like a whole research team, and it's like the space went silent, and so they send the FBI, and it's like the people there uncovered a microorganism from Stone Age or whatever the fuck,
right?
And it ends up still being alive, and whenever it gets into the body, it actually like reproduces as like a giant like centipede like thing that attaches to the base of the skull and controls all their actions. And so the whole thing just is like Mulder Matrix. Basically being crazy and thinking everybody else is possessed while everybody thinks Mulder is possessed. And Scully has to be the, like, referee between them. Is like, no. Mulder doesn't have the parasite. Mulder's like, that's right, it's him. And it's like, Mulder, shut the fuck up. They have your gun. Please just go sit in the corner.
So basically Mulder on coke.
Yeah.
This was Gillian Anderson and... fucking David Duchovny when David Duchovny was like, hey, guess what, I did a shit ton of coke, and they're like, let's do an episode about it.
Right. Good episode. Bad plot line to throw into this movie. So it turns out that this guy used to be a 713 agent as well. And if you remember to the opening text crawl about that mine shaft from the 60s that mysteriously closed down or whatever the fuck. This agent was one of those on site responding to it, and then he disappeared.
Right.
And so now here he is, and he's possessed. It's like, that mineshaft is really close by, stroking his beard. That's the thing. This doctor is actually, like, a really important character actor who's still working today. His name is Frank Turner. He's been in Needful Things. He's been in Hot Rod, Kicking It Old School.
Of course,
he was in Warcraft, and most recently he was in Sonic the Hedgehog. If you remember that movie, he was the crazy town guy who kept saying he saw a blue hedgehog running around, and everyone was like, "Oh, you're a crazy hedgehog!" And he had all the drawings and stuff.
Who was he in Hot Rod?
A crazy bum.
So basically, is it,
he's
like,
a character
are
actor.
All of his characters bum?
He's not as great as character actress Margot Martindale, but he's pretty close.
But Margot Martindale has range. Hashtag pee moment.
I saw a post on Reddit where they're like, I just fucking realized that the reason they keep saying character actress Margot Martindale in BoJack Horseman is because they literally write her as a crazy character actress in the scene she's involved in.
Yeah.
That's the joke.
She's also awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's really great. She's really great as the villain of season 3 of Justified. But yeah.
We will have to discuss that
season, she is basically adopts this little girl whose dad used to be one of the weed farmers for her. And that little girl is going to be the girl who's playing Abby in season 2 of Last of Us.
I'm dying.
Okay. Stop drinking so much then. I'll fucking know. Damn.
Should I pee your bed?
Alright. Yep.
Alright.
So, they, 713 has these scanners that could detect these parasites in people. And then immediately it's still like going off, and the doctor's like, oh, this is strange, it's still going off. And that's when they realize that Slater has this thing in him too, and they perform an x-ray, and it's like, well, it's been dead for a long time. And Slater's like, yeah, when I was a kid, I ran away from the orphanage and got electrocuted. That must be when it died.
Right.
Just leave it in.
Hence
there.
Hence the zapping.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, but why did it still grow with your spine then?
Because Uwe Boll.
But also, it's like, you worked for this bureau for how many years, and they never scanned you before? They have all these documents because, as an orphan, you were part of these experiments, and so they should have all this documentation on you and stuff. Mm-hmm. So certain people should know about this thing that you have inside you, yet all the important people didn't seem to notice until just now.
Right.
At this point, Dr. Hodgson gets back to the museum. He has a conversation with Tara Reid. He's like, hey, did my package arrive? And she's like, yeah, I opened it. Is there some crazy stuff in there? He's like, it's strictly said on the slip, don't open it unless you're Dr. Hodgson, which is me, my name. That's my name. That's not your name. Is your name Dr. Hodgson? No, it's not. I'm Dr. Hudson. I open the box.
I'm Dr. Hudson.
So he walks off in a huff, and it turns out he has one of the darkness beasts locked up in a cage in his office, and he, like, pulls blood out from it and, like, injects it into his own veins. For reasons.
Because it feels good.
So at this point, back with Slater and the other doctor, that doctor is like telling Slater all about these darkness creatures and how they just started showing up 2 years ago, and 713 has been hunting them ever since, and they even developed these special bullets that have light phosphorescence or whatever, and it shreds these dark creatures and kills them. And it's like,
cool.
Okay, if that was true though, then all of the agents would have those kinds of bullets, which means back at the museum scene, their bullets wouldn't be bouncing off of the monster and scaring it off into the dark. They would actually be killing it.
Right. No, kind of so, like, you know, it was not cool with light.
You're not close enough.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, continue.
It's like barely picking you up.
I'm sorry. All right, continue.
So Slater goes back to his place, basically disrobes and crawls into bed. And then this is when Tara Reid shows up and just starts like looking over his own notes and stuff. Like she owns the place. But I assume this is where
Come
the sexy
here,
was
guys.
Supposed to happen, but yeah. So Slater wakes up and it's like, so you done going over my notes? And she's like, putting her hair back up in a bun and putting the glasses back on.
Mm.
Because she has to say scientific things, so she needs to look scientist-y.
Science. But that's not on her.
It's not on her, no.
No.
But it's, like, really bad scene building. Like, she comes in with her hair down, you know, makeup and everything. Mm. And then it's like, well, in order to explain all of the stuff that I just looked at on your computer, I gotta put the glasses back on. I gotta put my hair back up in a bun. Otherwise, no one will take me seriously.
It's kind of like the director sucks dick. And she just admit it because that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Good for you. Suck some dick. It's cool.
So, yeah, Slater is like, she's like, what does this all mean? And he's like, all I know is these artifacts fit together, and I need you to tell me why that is. She's like, yeah, but it's just like a bunch of random words. I can't make heads or tails of it. He's like, well, we got all night to figure it out. But they don't have all night, because just then, electricity starts funking out again, and then they get attacked by all of the sleeper agent people. And so Slater has to kill his best friend from the orphanage and all the other orphans that grew up with him. Well, at least until they were 12 and Slater ran off and they were taken by a government agency. But still.
Right.
It's during this moment that we get a fancy gunfight in the dark with new metal music playing over the scene. It's just like, while Slater and Reed are just like blasting into the darkness and stuff. And then all of a sudden it starts cutting to like Steven Dorff and his unit. And apparently they're also at Slater's place. It never talks about them going to his place or how they showed up or anything. It's just like in the middle of this metal montage, it starts cutting to them and they're also shooting into the dark.
Dude. Like, listening to this was, like, a very weird and very specific moment in my childhood. Like, where I was like, oh, wow, I remember when I knew people who were like, yeah, the soundtrack to this movie, and it's like, that is some music, alright? And this is somebody who was like, yeah, Evanescence, yeah, fucking yada, yada, yada.
Well, yeah, Uwe Ball particularly sought out metal-centric people, but he got, like, pretty up-and-coming bands. No one, like, really, really big.
Yeah, it wasn't their fault.
If anyone's curious, the song that plays during this segment is Ghost by Nemic. M-N-E-M-I-C.
Alright, so as a metal boy, what would you rate it?
I mean, it's pretty basic. It's not as like annoying as other new metal at the time. You know,
anything you'd listen to again?
Yeah, I listen to
but go on.
No, you just like missed my joke.
I didn't.
I said it's better than the other stuff that was out at the time, like Linkin Park.
Oh, yeah. No, fuck Linkin Park. I don't want to say it because it's just meh, but at the same time, like, that was a band where, like, the worst people I knew liked them. And so it just was like, ah, no. No. No thank.
It's just, it wasn't good stuff. It's just a rap rock band with a DJ.
A really good DJ, though. I mean, I don't know. Whatever.
In the middle of this gunfight, Steven Dorff is like, Slater, we're here to arrest you because we know you have a creature in your body. And Slater's like, you really think I'm one of the bad guys? Do you not see me shooting the bad guys? And then there's a part where one of the creatures starts attacking Steven Dorff, and Slater's like, hey, Dorff! And they look over, and then he shoots the creature. He's like, told you I got your back! And now they're best buddies.
Wee!
And what proceeds is basically a conversation about how all of these creatures seem to be heading towards this gold mine region, and 713 needs to go reinforce that area because apparently it's important to whatever these things are looking for.
Mm.
But during this is also them still at this weird department store thing that Slater lives in, and they're slowly getting picked off by the monsters. And it's just like, random people are dying, and yeah, then the three main people are like, let's go to this other location. Goodbye. So it then like cuts to them like basically reinforcing this gold mine area. They got automated turrets, they got Humvees, they got helicopters, they got everybody with guns.
Shooty shoots and flay flies.
I take this moment to inform you that all of the cool body armor they're wearing is actually airsoft gun body armor.
So right.
It looks like Halloween didn't costume want it to masks. Hurt.
I don't want hurty stuff.
But so one of the things is like, okay, so these are creatures of darkness. They get hurt by the light. We got special light bullets that's supposed to kill these creatures. And we got ginormous spotlights to shine on the creature so that they take more vulnerability damage. But it all hinges on this one generator that's been at this gold mine for like 30 years. And there's one guy that's in charge of getting this generator up and running. Because if this generator's not running, then none of their electronics are going to work. And it's like, really? You couldn't bring your own generator for this? A reliable generator that you know is working. You no. bring the automated turrets
Mm-mm.
that are motion sensitive, but you don't bring your own generator?
Mm-mm. No, why would I do that? That's dumb.
So,
why would I think ahead of everything?
As they set up all of this, the Dr. Hutchison, he goes and visits the other doctor at his house and basically assaults him and shoves a parasite into his mouth so that that doctor is mind controlled now.
Don't read into that one, kids. Definitely nothing to read into.
And Dorf, Reed, and Slater and a small group of people that we'll call cannon fodder go into the mine to find out what's in there.
That's cute.
And during this is when the assault happens, and basically Dr. Hudson comes with an army of these darkness creatures, and they all run down and start getting slaughtered by these bullets. And some of them, the bullets go through them and they die, and others, the bullets bounce off them, so it's like very inconsistent and stuff, but it's all about people dying for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the guy gets the generator up and running, and he's like, alright guys, we're good to go. Oh, but the mind controlled doctor is not there. And walks in because nobody decides to put a guard on the guy who's fixing the generator that hinges, that is the like linchpin of their entire defense network right now. It's like, we don't need to watch this. Nobody will attack our generator. Well, possessed Dr. Guy walks up and pulls the pin on one of the grenades, and it all blows up. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The defense fails. But during that, the mine group they basically go down as far as they can until they reach a spot that has like ancient writing on the walls. They're like, what does this all mean? And one of the cannon fodder guys looks at the floor, is like, wait, I think I see something. And then the floor like collapses under him and he falls down a very long pit with spikes at the bottom. So he dies. The others set up ropes to like climb down, but as they're climbing down, this giant stone pillar that's meant to like close off the hole starts coming down, and so everybody has to like get to the bottom as fast as possible without hitting the spikes. And one of the girls, the cannon fodder soldiers, she breaks her leg when she falls off, so they're bandaging up the leg, and then they get attacked by a CGI dark snake thing.
God, that is such a scene. It's like
basically pops out, bites the girl who broke her leg on the spot where she broke her leg.
I mean,
and apparently it has like a venomous bite because she starts convulsing and dying, and everybody else shoots into the ground around them.
God.
And it's just a scene of this is super action scene, and it's like these actors swinging their guns around, shooting blanks into the dirt.
Or just like aiming guns, going pew 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 pew, pew 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 pew. Oh my god, it's so
Slater
fucking
is holding a 357 Magnum in one hand, it's just blasting randomly, and then the other hand he has like an M16, he's blasting with that, and it's
She's
just like
over there.
The recoil would over shatter there. Your fucking wrist.
God, this whole fucking thing. Like, honestly, like, Tara Reid's whole job in this movie is telling people directions.
Yeah.
There. Here, guys. Over there. No. Hey. Honestly, it's like, wow, Uwe Boll. You really knew she had range.
He didn't hire her for her range. He hired her for her tits
boobies.
That she wouldn't
and
show.
And then she was like, no. And then he's like, ah, no, I'm a German. And
why did I already pay you up front? Fine, do the scene.
And she's like, you're fucking right. I mean, honestly, good for her.
So,
good for her.
After they fight off the sand snake darkness creatures, they realize that one of the walls in that cave system is not like the others. It looks like modern cinder blocks. And so they put a C4 charge on it and blows it out.
Whee!
And, of course, they uncover a laboratory. A 713 laboratory. And all these beds are child size. And one of them even says Edward Carnby on it. And Dwarf gets mad because he's like, the bureau I work for has been lying to me all along, and they're the ones who created these creatures that we're fighting. We're cleaning up their mess. Oh, capitalism. And so there's like this weird electronic switch next to the door, like a generator's toggle switch, and Slater pulls it. And that opens up these blast doors. And on the other side of the blast doors is this, like, funky wall with the ancient writing on it. And in the middle is, like, this key slot. And it's like, oh, but if we put all of these artifacts I found together, then they form the key. Mm-hmm. But should we open it? We should not open it. Too bad. Dr. Hodgkins is down there, and he shoots the last cannon fodder person. And he's like, give me the key. And they're like, you don't know what you're doing. He's like, yes, I do. I spent all of my life researching this. I know exactly what's going to happen. And Carnby hadn't run away that night, then they never would have shut down my program, and I would have had this a lot sooner.
Super. Thank you, homie.
So, as Hodgson gets the key and unlocks the door... Dorf basically throws a knife and it hits him in the chest and he's dead.
Dope.
But the door opens to a giant room with green screen. It's basically a CGI mat of a giant cavern that is just filled with thousands of these darkness creatures and stuff. And they're like, we must blow it, so we'll just leave this bag of C4 at the entrance.
Yeah.
And we'll run, and we'll shut these blast doors, which are basically impenetrable.
Take care of it.
Right? And then as they're running out, Dorf realizes that his remote control can't, like, go through the blast doors to set off the charge. So he's like, I need to do it manually. And they're like, no! He's like, it's what I must do. You two get out of here. And so they get out, and it turns out that they're underneath the orphanage from the beginning that Carnby grew up in. But
Right? I was like, okay. Totally earned.
Dorf runs back down, opens the blast doors that, again, still could have sealed in the creatures. He grabs the bag of C4, pulls it back into the laboratory to do a timer on it while just firing randomly into the cavern. They like don't do any CGI for like creatures coming out the door or anything. It's just like him firing off into the chasm, and it's like, good job.
Cool.
But
you're a really cool guy.
He sets a 5-second timer, then throws the bag back into the doorway, and it blows up, and of course knocks him down. And the movie takes that extra second to show that Dorf is not dead. He's still alive, but everybody else thinks he died because the explosion happened, so.
Cool.
You probably have internal bleeding, and you're probably going to die because nobody else wants to go back in and investigate.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to be able to, like, revenant your way out of this one, homie. Like, I'm sorry.
But, I'm just like, you know, that explosion maybe caved in that opening. Maybe it didn't, because there's, like, ancient door stuff, and you've already proven that your explosions can't really mess with whatever they did with the stonework back then. So it's like, more than likely, you just kind of blew yourself up and the opening is still open, and you could have just closed the blast doors and probably hotwired them so they never open again, and that would have served a better purpose to try to blow the door, because you definitely didn't kill any of the creatures on the other side either. Good job.
Cool guys, cool. You did such a good job, guys. You did such a good job. You were all doing so good at your job. That's how good you are at your job.
Also, like, kind of intercut between this, but it's pretty, like, it doesn't really matter. But while they were investigating the lab and stuff, it would cut back to the soldiers at the gold mine entrance fighting off the darkness, and then they're getting overrun. And this is the only time in the movie that we actually get some gore. Like, one of the guys gets his arm ripped off. One of the girls has half her face ripped open.
Dope.
You know, it's, like, really cool stuff. But they hold it all in this one particular area and easily cut around so that they can make the movie PG-13 if they have to.
Of course.
But that's really all that happens, is that group gets overran. And then there's a part where HQ is trying to, like, radio them in, and then they, like, hear something crawling on the roof of their building, and you don't know what's going to happen to them. So Slater and Reed are at the orphanage, and it's daytime now, and the nun has basically killed herself. She slit her wrists in the night, and the kids she was watching there must have disappeared too,
or are dead because of monster reasons. But
so those two are, like, they walk all the way back to the city. Like, there's just cars that are, like, basically left abandoned in the middle of the road. Like, everything's just left abandoned. The only thing not abandoned was a cat, who is apparently hungry.
I'm hungry, baby.
But yeah, you see this... So
tell me where that nun is.
There's like, this text that comes up on the screen that's, like, city successfully evacuated. It's like, this isn't an evacuation. These people just disappeared. Like,
no.
The only cars that look like they were used are parked in the middle of the street and are empty. So it's like, unless you had soldiers running around, like, ripping them out of the cars, which is un-American and would never happen in real life. It's like, these people just disappeared. And then Slater and Reed, they go to the HQ, and the HQ is completely empty, and there's nobody there. And Slater does his inner monologue again, and he's like, last time that door was open and darkness overran, the ancient people realized they messed up in it. And whenever they locked up darkness again, they all disappeared from the face of the earth. And I'm afraid it's happened again. And then it does the, like, Resident Evil zoom in on them two being alive with the monster sounds behind the camera. And that's the end of the movie. And then,
if I had an angel just for one moment of my life.
So, yeah. that was a movie that Uwe Boll made.
It's still not the worst movie he made, though. No. I honestly think it's the best of his Uwe Boll.
But in the same year, the movie Wolf Creek came out, and both of these movies got an F rating. Like, both were like, these are terrible movies. And it's like, I feel like Wolf Creek was really more of a, like, it came out too early, because it was, like, just before everyone got crazy about Saw and Hostel and stuff. Right. So it was like, oh, I can't believe you just made a torture movie and stuff. And it's like, just wait. There's going to be about 15 years of this crap. But yeah, like, again, this is maybe a D movie at worst. It's not an F. It's still competent enough.
Yeah, like, it's a good D. I would say, like, not a heavy D, but, like, a D. Noticeable.
Like, shot setups, the graphic effects, even the dialogue is like, it's not his worst.
Especially for Uwe Boll.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks for making eye contact, homie.
This may go down as his worst, but it's I hesitate to say his best.
I don't know. I don't think Uwe Boll has a best. I don't know. I mean,
I feel like Postal would probably be his best, but that's just because the humor of the game fits his humor.
Mm.
And so it's almost like a near perfect recreation of the game just because the game is as bad as that.
Well, I guess we'll have to visit that sometime.
And this movie, it was released at the end of January. It released against Elektra, the follow-up to
Daredevil. Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck's Daredevil, mm-hmm. Yes. Racing Stripes, the family feel-good movie races a zebra
Frankie
in horse
Muniz.
Races. Yeah.
God damn.
Coach
that
Carter.
That is a brain. Or like a needle to the brain. Anyway, go on.
The remake for Assault on Precinct 13.
Jesus fucking Christ. What a year.
The Ice Cube movie Are We There Yet?
Jesus.
Million Dollar Baby.
Oh God, I remember that one.
And then early February was Boogeyman, Hitch,
oh, God.
Heffalump Movie, Ong Bak the Thai Warrior,
Constantine,
Son of Mask,
Constantine.
And Cursed.
You know what? Constantine, though,
like,
that's a
I
good fucking movie.
It was like one of those things where it's like I liked it for a year and then hated it because it's like not as good as the comics.
I don't give a fuck
and
about the comics.
And then I started, I came back around to it.
No, it's like one of those movies where it's like, just fucking like it.
Yeah.
And then shut the fuck up. Like, I don't know, like when people are I don't like the 90s Addams Family because it's not like the 60s fucking sitcom. Yeah. Like, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Ong Bak was really good as like one of Tony Jaa's first movies. Is kind of like a resurgence of that Asian kung fu type movies. And I didn't really like what they did with the sequels. Like the first one's set in modern times, and the sequels were like ancient China, kind of the protector back then that inspired their fighting style for the modern times and stuff. And it's like, I kind of like the modern fighting story more. So Assault on Precinct 13, the remake, was trash. It was a trash remake. It should never have been done. The director should feel bad and should never work again. The original Carpenter Assault on Precinct 13, it's like one of his earliest movies, but also hit one of the only ones he did that was like it was still suspenseful without having some kind of like monster element to it. It was like, it was really just like gangs in LA attacking this police station. It was really cool. He did a lot of really cool effects on it. And the remake was like trying to put this fourth layer in of like, it's actually like a team of cops fighting off all these gang members, but one of the cops is actually like working with the gang members and giving out secrets and stuff. It's like you're working too hard at this. Not to mention like
too
shoddy editing, like whole sections of the movie cut out.
Right.
For runtime purposes. Yeah. It was bad. And then Curse was the Wes Craven werewolf movie, which, I mean, if we're doing like our first.
I remember that with Christina Ricci. Yeah. Right?
I mean, we should set it up as like the first movie of season 4 since we're doing werewolf movies at the start of our season.
I'm down. All right. You got to put a pin in it. I'm down. Because so, I do love Christina Ricci, and I do know that movie is not my favorite, but I also don't really like Wes Craven all that much.
There was parts that were, like, really cool and interesting, and then other parts that he really, really fumbled the ball.
I'm a John Carpenter girl all day. That guy knows what's up.
Yeah. John Carpenter is the more competent filmmaker, but I still feel Wes Craven has the more... I don't want to say campy.
Humid?
How to put it? I don't know. I lost it. But I still like Wes Craven. He does come up with good ideas.
So he originally wanted to be like a rom-com director, but people are like, no, keep making these horror movies. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
So like his movies are like, they try to have like a heart. And that's nice. And that's cool. And that's great. But at the same time, John Carpenter... It's fucking amazing. There's
just a point where Wes Craven decided, I could do horror as PG-13. And it's like, no. Mm. No, you can't. Because it weakens the horror. Mm. But he did a whole run of movies as PG-13, including Cursed. A werewolf movie. Yeah. That's PG-13. He did Them or They. But basically, a creature that acts like the boogeyman. And it's like, they abduct children. And put a tracker in them and then harvest them when they're adults, kind of thing.
Okay.
It's a really cool idea, but the part you lose me is, you know, like, there's just nothing really scary that happens during it. Yeah. So,
alrighty, so this movie sucks. Would you watch it again?
Would I? I didn't want to.
Okay, so like, films, where would you put it?
If we're doing like an Uwe Boll mix, I wouldn't do like a whole string of them. I would pick like three movies of his to rewatch. Mm. This would be one of them.
Because in the name why?
Like we said, it's like it's kind of really one of his more competent movies.
Fair.
It's fine. It's put together fine. You can follow it just fine. It's just a bad movie. In the Name of the King, I would watch again, just because it's Jason Statham playing. It's like a D&D game, but Jason Statham is like a barbarian. And the main villain is, what's his name from Goodfellas? Ray Liotta as a wizard. Right on. And it's just like...
Okay.
It's almost worth dredging through that movie to watch that finale.
Let's go!
And the third movie... I have to choose... I mean, I'd probably say House of the Dead, just because it's kind of like, if we want to talk Uwe Boll's range, that has to be included as, I feel that's his worst one, just because of how many times he flashbangs the audience to do erratic cutting of all of the action. It's like, he's purposely giving you a seizure, people.
Yeah, he probably is.
He's hoping if you walk away with brain damage, you won't remember how bad this movie is. I didn't like Postal. It's like, it's trying to be a dark comedy in a sense, but is like, I don't like the games either. They're just like,
okay.
You know, kind of like supreme edgelord incel humor kind of shit. Blood Rain is just disappointing, and all of the money went to getting the high paid actors, and they all just feel like, this was not worth my time doing this, but I'm stuck here for 3 weeks.
Well, here I am, having to work.
Yeah, so if I was to recommend it, if people are doing like a bad movie night or something, I would recommend it, or if they just kind of like, I've never seen Uwe Boll before, I'd be like, yeah, watch this. This is probably his most bearable movie.
Yeah, I would say, like, here's a movie to start with, and then whatever you do from there is at your own cost.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I guess it's like kind of like introducing people to Dark Souls, except shitty.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's
like,
pretty
well,
apt.
Here you go. And then, like, fuck you. I'm off to go make my own shit sandwich. Bye-bye.
Do you want more of this? It wasted my time, it pissed me off, and yes, give me more.
Yum, 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 yum. I want more, please, Daddy, yes.
All right.
All right.
Well, yeah,
so
that's
no,
it.
I wouldn't watch it again. I mean, like, if I had to, I would, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
But I don't want to watch it again. Please don't. Whatever.
And yeah, for those curious, it's almost always free on Tubi. So you never have to pay a dime to watch it.
You know what's kind of weird, though?
What's it?
I kind of want to watch House of the Dead.
Yeah, fair.
All right.
When you're eating a shit sandwich, you kind of want something to wash it down
Which is like another shit sandwich. I'm going to wash it down with some shittier sandwich. Anyway.
All right. Well, with that, we're hoping we'll get Taylor in. We'll get Queen of the Damned to close out this month. We're going to have some fresh brews on Lisa Frankenstein and the Dunkelbergs Part 2.
Dunkelberg. I don't understand it. Dune. Sandy Dune part says two. Shit. Okay.
Look, okay, if we're talking about like one of those what is it? The like artistry behind like signs and signage and stuff. Like, it's pretty clever to do like Dune as, you know, the same U shape in different directions because it makes sense, you know. And then the final is technically a C, but then they put the planet right in the middle, so it creates that little E line.
Oh, cool! You know, cool story.
It's clever. It's a clever use.
I mean,
of signage.
It's definitely a designed image. But it says dunk, just like, instead of, so like, I can't not see Matchstick Men other than Matchstick Ivan.
Okay.
It really is. All right. But then on that note, yeah. I guess we're good.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you all for listening. You can catch us on any of your favorite streaming platforms.
Please,
so please like and subscribe and show all your fans.
Watch us do shit.
If you wish
to
support us, go to patreon.com/videoboos. If you wish to talk to us, go to videoboos@gmail.com. Thank you. We'll catch you on the flip flop.
Boy.
What the hell are you doing here, Carnby?
Hey, Burke, good to see you, too.
Shouldn't be here. This is my unit now.
You must be very proud.
You used to be able to take care of yourself there, Carnby.
Got a little soft since you left 713?
Should take you to the medic, check that arm.
This what? Catch up.
Why are you still here?
Why am I still here? I just got my ass chased around this goddamn museum by something I couldn't see. I want to know what the hell they are, what they're doing in the goddamn city. I want to know what 713 knows
about
it.
You're not 713 anymore, okay? That information's classified. That means it's none of your fucking business. We've got this under control. Thank you. I don't need your help. Get him out of here, Marco.
I asked very nicely.
Hey. What, huh? All right.
You're right, Burke. Maybe I have gotten soft.